In the creation myth of the Mayan culture, humans were created out of the sacred corn. And after they die, they go into the earth and they become one with the earth, and more corn grows from them and it feeds the next generation. The anthropologist Richard Leakey says there are numerous theories about when humans came into being. In other words, what was the point from which they were no longer apes and they were human beings? And some say that it was the invention of language. Others say it was the invention of tools. Still others say that it was when they started warring against each other, because other animals don't do that. Leakey claims that it was when they started sharing food. For animals, eating is a solitary act, but for humans, it's a communal thing. They share food with one another. And Leakey says that sharing food preceded language and, in fact, developed language, because you have to talk if you're going to be sharing food. At least that's the idea. Well, meals then, sharing food, becomes one of the most human things we can do. And it's not by accident that Jesus leaves us a meal in remembrance of him. Over and over again, the scriptures suggest that salvation has to do with feasting, sharing food. Jesus, on many occasions, gives the example or the image of the kingdom as a banquet that a king threw for his son, a wedding banquet. Images of feasting meals for the kingdom. And then Jesus leaves us the Eucharist, which is his body and blood, and he becomes the food that we eat. Just like the sacred corn in the Mayan myth, we eat of God, and we become God, and then we feed the next generation. Years ago, I was back in my home parish in Russell for a funeral of an elderly woman who had died, and I didn't preach the homily, but I was, as I was listening to it, the priest, his main point was what a great bridge player she was. And I was told later that she wasn't all that good. But as I was sitting there listening to that, I thought, this isn't what I would say. What I would say is, this woman was from one of the original founding Catholic families in that town. And she married into one of the other original founding Catholic families in that town. And over the years, she raised children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and she feasted on the Eucharist every Sunday, and then later in life, every day. And I would have said that she fed on Christ, became Christ, and now in death, she is Eucharist for the rest of us. I think this is what witness is all about. It's eating and drinking of God and becoming God and then becoming God for one another. In that gospel story, Jesus, and Father read the short form, so I'm going to tell you the long form. There's a kind of a reconciliation that Jesus has with Peter. Peter denied Christ three times. Now he gets to say, I love you three times. So they have this conversation. And after each time that Peter says, I love you, Jesus says, feed my sheep. Now, whenever you see anything about Peter in the Gospels, it's always the church. Peter stands for the church, you and me. So, through Peter, he is telling us, feed my sheep. Let other people feed on your witness. Witness unto death. You know, the Greek word for witness is martyr. And martyr is someone who died in witnessing for the faith. So in this conversation with Peter, Jesus says, when you were a young man, you tied your own belt, you dressed yourself, and you went where you wanted to go. But as an old man, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten the belt around you and lead you where you do not want to go. And the text says, he said this to indicate what kind of death Peter would die. Well, Peter was crucified just like his Lord, and so hands extended is crucifixion. But there's more than just that. It's that willingness to be led by God instead of self-determining. There's something within human nature that wants to be in control, in charge of our own lives. I know in my own life, I'm always imagining this self that I think I should be, even though I am old enough to know better. But, you know, we keep falling into the same sins. Imagining a self that I think would be worthy, good, impressive, whatever. But every once in a while, I have to sort of hit myself on the head and say, how could I think that I could imagine a me better than the one God imagines for me? And so I have to be more like Peter. I have to be willing to stretch out my hands and allow God to fasten the belt and lead me where God wants me to go instead of where I willfully would like to go. And this is so Jesus, who never had a thought for himself, who never had his own will, but only the will of the Father in mind. As he hangs upon the cross, not my will, but yours be done. This is so characteristic of Jesus, it becomes characteristic of Peter. Peter, like all of us, has to struggle with it. Peter is willful, and he has hoof and mouth disease, and he gets in his own way a lot of the time, says the wrong things, does the wrong things. But Jesus patiently forgives him over and over again. There's reconciliation. There's new possibilities. And as an old man, Peter finally gets it. And he becomes this courageous witness. Peter is the one who says in that first reading from the Acts of the Apostles, we have to obey God instead of humans. And says along with the rest how privileged they feel to suffer for the sake of the name of Christ. Well, this feeding kind of has to do with suffering. It involves suffering. Everything we eat, some part of creation had to sacrifice its life so that we can eat that. Even the vegetables, they had to give up their lives so that we could have life. Whatever meat or fish we eat, some animal had to give up its life for us. If we are going to feed the sheep, if we're going to feed each other, there's a laying down of our lives that has to take place on a regular basis. And while that may sound negative and something that we don't want to hear, when you think about it, this is life. For many people who are married, life never really began until they laid down their life for that other person. Lost themselves in that other person and found that that actually made them joyful, brought them happiness. For many of you parents, the greatest experience of happiness is the laying down of your lives for your children and grandchildren that has happened. And the world is telling us a contrary message. Oh, be careful, don't give too much away. Guard, be safe, keep. And Jesus is always telling us, let go, die. This is happiness. I may have told you this before. Viktor Frankl, the great psychologist, has a great line in one of his books. Americans love to search for happiness, but happiness can't be found. It cannot be purchased. It cannot be earned. Happiness is a byproduct of worship. And he defines worship in the generic sense of giving your life over to something larger than yourself. Giving yourself over to something larger than yourself. And in doing so, you discover, as a byproduct, you are happy. This losing of our lives, it's not just a diligent penitential practice that we do during Lent. We do this because it makes us happy. Many of you have discovered in various ways in life, and particularly in this parish, that the amount of volunteer work in this parish is impressive. And I know that many of you will just do pretty much anything you're asked over and over again, and you stretch yourselves farther and farther. And why do you do that? You don't do it as a penance. You do it because somehow it makes you happy. It brings meaning to your life. It brings joy. The sharing that goes on here, even your being here this morning was a dying. You could be someplace else. You could be in bed. You could be golfing, you know. But there's something about the laying down of your life and being here, sharing this meal with one another, that makes you happy.